Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are back. I got a special announcement that just happened. I hadn't even told you yet.
No, you haven't.
I did. So between the last episode that we recorded and this episode, I have been appointed pastor of training and education for a church. So it's not a senior pastor position. It's an education pastor. It was a pastor of education, basically.
I had told you you was brilliant. I'm very excited for you.
So the reason why I say that, I don't usually like talk about the stuff that I'm doing, which is a flaw of mine. But I say that because it's relevant to what we're talking about today. It was a difficult process to go through.
Okay.
Based on some of the things that we're going to discuss, because I'm thinking through this topic and how can I best be of service and those type of things. So it's a position I never thought I would find myself in. And now here we are. So
yes.
That's what's going on with me. What's going on with you?
I mean, I'm just here. I'm actually speechless at your announcement, but you know how we talk off air. And your recent journey through seminary has just been so eye-opening to me and so enhancing to my knowledge base. So I'm excited to see what you do leading the helm of learning and development on behalf of a ministry. I don't know. I don't even know what comes next, but I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're
so
welcome.
The church is launching, yes. Yeah, so I'll have more about that later. But Today we're talking about how do churches survive this moment that we're in?
Mm-hmm.
It's a relevancy question.
Okay.
Based on what we know church to be, what we know church can be, mm-hmm. What can it be right now?
Okay. So how would you define the moment that we're in? Flesh that out.
Okay. So we are currently living through a global pandemic, which forced the church to adapt in a lot of cases before they were ready. Mm-hmm. We are living through a time of racial injustice that is not unique, but it's unique in that it's the first time this generation has had to deal with it head on. Previous generations have dealt with it in their way and for their types. This generations are now being forced to face it with some of those lessons learned. Maybe some of those muscles have atrophied and getting back into fighting shape for what we're doing. And also we talked last time about climate change. But then we also have this period. It's an economic or labor condition, but it's the Great Resignation. So for people's jobs, they're leaving jobs because during the pandemic, they were forced to reassess how they spend their time, where they put their energy. And so they did not see in some cases that their job was the best place for that, and that's how also happened in churches. Now you have people who some have gone to church or been in the practice of going to church every week, and they couldn't do that, and so they did other things with that time. Maybe they missed church during that time, but also maybe they enjoyed the break. Maybe they filled that time with other things. Now churches have the challenge of getting them back into the pews now that they know the glories and wonders of not having to go to church every week. And so with all of these things happening in the world, there's this confluence where churches have to wrestle with, what do we do now?
Right. So when we talk about, you know, the Great Resignation, it reminds me of conversations that we had in previous seasons where it's not so much, kind of to your point that you just made, it's not so much that people have just left their work institutions. The church was experiencing an exodus before COVID became an issue and before some of these other issues came to the forefront. And it's almost as if the pandemic jumped in front of some of those other things that were being considered. You know, are we catering to younger members in a way that resonates with them? Are we catering to people who identify with marginalized communities in a way that resonates with them, in a way that makes them feel like their ministries are dynamic? And a lot of that work was undercut by the fact that the physical building and or the repetitive practice of how people engage their ministries was just disrupted along with everything else. So as we consider what a return to normal might look like or whether or not that's even possible, this conversation is about how the church is not even excluded from that conversation. That, you know, just as some people are considering, much like myself, you know, what would it mean to continue in a 80% or more telework environment for people who had never had that opportunity? Likewise, for people who realized that their jobs, their labor was inextricably tied to showing up every day. You know, how does that impact your lifestyle going forward, especially if something else pivotal has happened? So when we take a break from how we engage with institutions and with certain practices and processes, we take a moment for us to kind of realize whether, and you know, whose priority is that? Whose hierarchy, whose process is that? And what a lot of people have kind of tapped into is that they've been doing things because they've been told to, or that's how they've been trained, or that's how it's always been. And one of the opportunities of the upheaval that COVID brought for everybody is just a moment to reconsider. And it's no longer just your own personal revolution. Now it's something for the institution to reconsider. So, you know, we talk about churches in two different levels with two different lenses. We talk about the church in general as an institution, but then we talk about the Black church, of course, as an institution and as a cultural mainstay and marker. So that this conversation is for that.
Yeah, you raise an important point about what was happening in churches prior to the pandemic, where churches were hemorrhaging members and also resources because of that. And mm-hmm. we hadn't gotten to a point where the solution or even the cause of the problem was identified.
Yep.
And as we discussed on this show, we suspect there were multiple causes. So you had your issues with theology, which mm-hmm. had proven harmful and also rigid for churches who refused to reassess or adapt. There was a generational issue where
a gap.
Boomers, baby boomers, I don't want to be derogatory, baby boomers, they were used to doing a thing. They were used to having that institution mm-hmm. and they trusted their institutions. Gen mm-hmm. X comes along and those institutions start to be questioned. And so some people in the Gen X camp say, okay, we can still trust them. There's some good there. And then other people say, well, I don't know if we need mm-hmm. them. And mm-hmm. then you come to millennials where their bridge to the loyalty of the baby boomers is kind of shaky in mm-hmm. Gen X. And then you get to Gen Z, and many of them didn't grow up in church at all. So there was no historical background for coming to that type of institution. Yeah. So and then you mix with that what was happening in the culture where trust in institutions is eroding. Mm-hmm. The church is an institution. And so what do we do with that? So churches were having that problem before. Mm-hmm. But churches also had some value that they provided. So when we talk about that state of the church prior to the pandemic, we also recognize that churches were a place of growth, specifically for members of the Black community. Mm-hmm. We also acknowledge that church has not always been safe for all members of the Black community. But for those members who were able to attend and not be harmed by theology and things that are going on and practices and policies of the church, you grew strength from being with those people. If in times mm-hmm. of loss, you had the ability to process grief together. You had practices of joy through different mm-hmm. things. Like I grew up as a musician in church. Like I learned my craft in church, and I took that and made that a professional career at one point. And so church is this cauldron of things that, you know, all these things are buttoned up against each other, good and bad, but it is a community building space. Mm-hmm. Also, one of the things that was an issue was church was largely focused on the Sunday experience before this. Now, some churches mm-hmm. were trying to adapt, but really your church life was structured around Sunday worship and then maybe one other day a week for Bible study or mm-hmm. some type of church meeting or something like that. In terms of teaching, it ranged from, let's say, a liberation theology in some churches, healing, to a self-help. Like, I mean, you look at Saddleback, and Rick Warren and those type of things. Or Joel mm-hmm. Osteen with right. a lot of those, the type of theology that he has is basically leveraging the self-help industry to Christianize that language and make it palatable for Christians. You know,
yes, the, I'm making faces.
Yes,
but go ahead.
So that's what it was, though. So
it was,
you look
it
at Joel Osteen's, basically his tweets, which kind of operate like fortune cookie fortunes, and say, what is the value of that right now?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So these are the things that the church was before the pandemic. And so now we have to reckon with what can it be?
I mean, again, I think that we've identified some of the good things that were going on, but there were some things that were being questioned and were being questioned to the point of discontinuing or downgrading in their importance, such as the appearance and the presence of, or the value, the overall value of what we've come to know as prosperity preaching, the continuation of, let's say, many outdated ways to engage different members, different groups of members in the church, not least of which is Black women, their value to the ministry as well as to the congregation, the engagement of LGBTQIA members and how we strive to improve in those areas, and were we actually getting that right? And these, you know, the church, like any other institution that is going to be operated and housed and perpetuated on humans, it evolves as humans evolve. So what we're talking about is the evolution of the church. We evolve to survive. So just like there's a TikTok sound that says, if you don't have a pandemic baby, you know, don't talk to me, because they're talking about, and I guess people are really, you know, just now noticing that babies have extraordinary abilities, you know, in the first month of their life. But let's say that our children were changing. They might be changing so that they are evolving and so that they can have a fighting chance at survival for the world that they're entering, as opposed to the world that we've come to inhabit. The world that they're entering on day one might be year 40 of their mother's life, you know, or their parents' life. So it's the same thing. The church that I hope that, you know, my brand new grandson inherits is something that I have to ensure that I inform for its survival so that he can have access to it. And it's definitely not going to be the church that I experienced in my teenage years. So we're talking about the natural change and growth process, where some things that need to fall away, we need to identify what that is, and we need to make peace with it as it goes away. There will be some people who fight, but the church is an important enough institution crossing so many different demographics that we have to talk about how our faith practices will evolve to serve us in the future that we hope to inhabit.
Yeah, so people are looking forward to returning to normal in all areas of life, but in their areas mm-hmm. of in their faith life, they look at the church and say, in some respects, I miss that. Like, I miss the ability to go and, you know, have those dinners and have that event, or, you know, sit mm-hmm. in that service with those people. And that reminiscing or nostalgia has to give way to the fact that the world did change. Mm-hmm. It we didn't just stop doing a thing for a while. While we stopped doing that thing, everything was disrupted. You don't yeah. get disruption in the federal government. The federal government is the heart, or at least of this area, but also of the country. You don't make them work remotely for going on 2 years without a major event. You don't stop the NBA season for that. Like, this was a huge disruption.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah, most definitely.
We have to balance the fact that some of those things may be missed with the question, is it possible to go back to those things? Like, can we do that? You mentioned the evolution, and you also mentioned prosperity gospel. Prosperity gospel was an adaptation to the social economic boom following World War II. So mm-hmm. you get all of this money back into the communities, and so people have this disposable income, and they're starting to buy houses and starting to do all these things. And the focus now has gone from war to a prosperous nation.
Yeah.
Out of that, what do you do with that money? And so you see the rise of the Crystal Cathedral and Fred Price and Paul and Jan Crouch, and all these things come up out of that. And so the church responds to these historic moments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is that moment. This is actually one of those moments that it's as big as we've had. So the response must look like something.
So what are some examples that we were paying attention and that we, you know, didn't so much throw the baby out with the bathwater with our ministry interactions and our processes?
Okay, so churches were forced to go virtual with the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Whether they were structured for that or not is not the issue, but they learned. And we mm-hmm. saw very quickly how fast churches can adapt in that situation. So you have churches with a demographic that's older. They still have to do it. Those older congregants were able to figure out how to log on, mm-hmm. how to operate in the chat room. And then you also had some of them running the back end infrastructure, and they never had to right. do that before. So you had to do that. How do you give now? And, you know, I can't send mm-hmm. my check in. I have to give on this app. I don't know what that is. So right. churches did adapt that way. But also we did see a lot of churches turn their focus towards these issues that were impacting the Black community. Whether we judge those efforts as successful or not, that is something that the church needed to do, because I believe the church has gotten something wrong, and it is an old argument. In, I want to say, probably the third or fourth century, I got to check my math on that, but there was a North African bishop named Augustine, and Augustine had this idea that all humans, as a result of Adam, sinned. They were born into sin, and they could not stop sinning. And mm-hmm. the only way that they could be redeemed or stop sinning is for their Savior, in this case, Jesus, to save them. So the saving was something that God did. These humans sinned, they couldn't stop sinning, and they couldn't even choose to be saved. God had to initiate that process.
Okay.
And so Augustine was incredibly influential in Christian orthodoxy by saying that these are things that you can't control, and God is going to reach out for you to save you. And this is what you need. At the time, there was another philosopher named Pelagius who said humans do sin, but the reason why they do is because they make choices to sin. And at any point, you could make a different choice. And so your morality is determined based on the choices that you make. And so this was a big argument during the time in early Christian formation. What ended up happening, Augustine had the bigger megaphone. He had the most influence, and his argument won out.
Okay.
And so now we fast forward, you know, over 1,000 years and see that Christian orthodoxy has adopted Augustine's position that all these people sin and God is selective about who's chosen and all these other things. We look at Christians who have no regard for their neighbor from another country or next door. Christians who don't view morality as an act of choice, but as God's will. And so, you know, whether God wills it or not is the determining factor. And so we had Christians supporting a president that was morally bereft. Like, mm-hmm. and so that to me walks back to this Augustine Pelagius argument, because what would have happened had Pelagius's argument won? We would have a Christianity that says what you do does matter. Your moral uh-huh. choices matter. And so the fact that churches have been turning to some of these injustice issues that they have either been silent on or in some cases participated in is a turning that I think is necessary. And it's a correction based on the fact that all these years ago, the church maybe chose the wrong argument.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so now we have to look at ourselves. Where are we morally? Is this where we want to be? Is God just choosing arbitrarily who's saved and who's mm-hmm. who's not? Like, this, the church needs this type of challenge to it to make the correction.
Just from sheer scale, the type of change and evolution that we're talking about is not going to be possible without confrontation and interrogation. So to your point, I think that there were many pressing issues about how does the church represent the community. We talked about the church being a part, an extension of its community. As the community changes, what's going on in the institutions of the community are going to change. So we know that any particular neighborhood becomes very rich or very poor. One of the places that you'll be able to measure the temperature of that is in the schools. You'll be able to go into the schools, the institutions that are just sitting in a geographical limited area, and you'd be able to kind of take a pulse point on how many students have the materials they need, how many students are showing up well-fed, well-clothed, ready to work every day, according to what's going on out in the community. So what we're saying about this confrontation is that individually, certain churches, certain sects were looking at, what do we want to be in the next 20 years? Where will we make our impact? Where is it going to be safe for us to continue to be rooted in and hopefully grow in light of all of these things that were changing in the community? And they become pressing questions. And I think they are pressing questions for every generation, because each generation has different tools in their toolkit, has different weapons, you know, in their arsenal to repel what we call, you know, what we would think is a negative energy or something that threatens the life of the body. Not different from that is this idea that a rejection of sound knowledge, technology, the ability to build bridges, physical and virtual, so that we are, in a sense, kind of reinforcing our group, reinforcing our stake, our claim. Many churches adapted very quickly because they had been thinking about it. They had been thinking about it already. And the pandemic pushed them in that direction. They had been already kind of considering, you know, would it be so bad? Or instead of having Bible study, you know, once a month virtually, what if we did it weekly virtually? What happened in the community, though, under so much pressure, under so much stress, is we began to demand that the institution meet us where we were. So they had to come with virtual. They had to come with more options, because you cut out one of the processes, you know, not only behavior-wise, but also culturally. The saints, the seasoned saints, were showing up for Zoom church fully dressed. Mm-hmm. In their Sunday best, mm-hmm. because they were trying to continue that idea of, you know, old school decency and order, even though the engagement, the method of engagement had changed. That was a hybrid. You know what I mean? We had talked about how the pandemic was cutting us off from some of the cultural expressions that happened in our churches. And people found new and innovative ways to put the culture back into these new engagement practices. And one of the ways, you know, we've talked about my personal experience with funeral custom over the past year and a half. And one of the biggest hybrid examples I have is that of my beloved, you know, grandmother, where we were able to have a small service because of, you know, COVID restrictions lifting and changing, you know, miraculously at the time that we needed them to. But we also had that whole engagement through live stream. People were able to participate, mm-hmm. you know, and manage themselves, you know, govern themselves accordingly, but also be able to pay respect in a way that made cultural sense to us. It was, I mean, even as we're having this conversation, I'm saying there were babies dedicated like that. There were, you know, weddings that happened that way. And kind of to this example of, some of these things are going to go, but not everything has to go. There are ways for us to keep those things that are culturally relevant. There are some things that make the Black church the Black church that don't have to go away just because we're talking about mm-hmm. how do we remain relevant for the future.
Right. So we're in a period of adaptation, and the church is going to have to do that. Just to be clear, virtual church or virtual worship is not.
No.
It's not great. It's not always. So for instance, you know, you do miss some community interaction. You miss mm-hmm. that tactile response with other people. And then just being in community actually does matter. There's an energy there, energy transference between everyone that's in worship and things mm-hmm. like that. But also it's great for a lot of things. Like, you know, I can attend service and make sure my clothes go from the washer to the dryer. You know, I can, if I really like church, I can go to 6 churches, you know, by noon.
Truth of the matter is that virtual made church palatable to people who had left the building already. Yeah. It reintroduced a new way. Some, like we said, some churches were already doing that, but I attended church virtually more than I had physically in the previous maybe 3 years, because it was way more accessible. And it wasn't so much about, you know, we have this term bedside Baptist, you know, wasn't even really about its convenience. It was about the fact that I was able to tap into that energy. Yeah. I was able to discern it and able to invite it into my own personal space, because I did actually need, or found myself needing, community, even though it was not safe to gather.
Right. And we're dealing with generations now that are used to interacting digitally. And so virtual church is a natural extension of that. We have to figure out some things about how to make this, you know, acceptable, palatable for every generation that is currently living. But to look at that and say that was just for a time and it won't continue is just naive at this point, because I'm going to church in sweatpants, even though I'm a pastor. So you're not going to be able to stop me.
Right.
So in addition, another adaptation the church is going to have to go through is reimagining their space and how they use their space. Before, we talked about the Sunday model, where everything is focused on that Sunday worship experience. That's a really poor use of a building. It's almost like, you know, if I bought, so people talk about Chick-fil-A and how Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday, how much money they're using. The church's model is the opposite of that. The church is really open one day a week, and then the building, you know, maybe open a couple days during the week. But you're paying for the building every single day that week. So what do you do with that space? You can use that to start to meet some of the needs in that community. You can maybe provide after school drop off or after school care for those children in the community whose parents cannot afford the child care.
Right.
You can start to use that building to and some churches do, to distribute meals, to hold training sessions. Maybe, you know, you're holding job interview training, or you're helping people with their resumes, or you're meeting the needs in that community with that space that you're not using for anything else, Tuesday, Thursday, et cetera.
It's, you know, again, I just want to say it's not that certain congregations were not doing these things. You know, the main business of the church might have been on Sundays, but I know of a great many churches that were operating full ministerial networks and engagements almost every day of the week, depending on the size of your church. We're just saying that even more, you know, can be done. There is something else going on, you know, just like the pandemic is one thing, economics, family structure changing, the financial situation of a family changing. There's so many different moving parts to these considerations that we're just saying, here are the ways that you might find that, you know, you can make your church more relevant to not just people who are already members, but these bodies, you know, to survive, we're going to have membership, and it's going to have to be a membership that experiences the support for the lives that they lead as they're living them, not as we hope they will be. You know what I mean? We have to design for that. You know, as you were talking about support on daycare and everything, at the same moment, I'm understanding that, you know, economic inflation is causing for things to cost more. We're not saying that these things should all just be provided for free. We are just saying there might be an opportunity here for the institution, for its assets, for its resources to further serve the community and the congregation, if not for just a little imagination, a little bit of innovation on the design.
Right. And I'm explicitly saying this moment calls for that. Like, to not do that is to fail at the mission of this church, of the church. So as you said, like, churches would be open. So the fact that your church is open on Tuesday for a business meeting does nothing to help your community. Like, what does your community need that space to be open for, that is not selfish, that is not geared towards bringing more people into the church membership line? It is actually addressing a need in that community. Like, those are the mm-hmm. things that we need to be thinking through. Also, mission work has historically been for the purposes of, you know, basically converting people. The church, the communities around churches now need mission work, and not to convert people. It is to actually assist people, to help people. So instead of mm-hmm. sending those missionaries to Guyana or the Ukraine or all these and spending all that money and resources, like, look around you to see what the mission field looks like in that community. We've talked, and we're not going to go into it. We had an episode called Evangelicalism is Colonialism. So mm-hmm. I have my thoughts and opinions about how evangelicalism functions in its conversion practices, but the actual mission of the church is to do those things that Jesus did, to help those people who need help. And so turning that lens locally is one of those adaptations that the church could do in this moment.
I just feel like that's restorative and reparative social justice work. You know, when we talked earlier about the church found itself, or the community and the institution found itself having to respond to these racial injustices, and really not just incident-based or event-based racial injustices, such as, you know, a shooting or a response to that, but some of the systemic and systematic injustices, the structures. I'm always talking about the structures. To turn that mission work into an intensive local engagement is restorative, is reparative. As opposed to extracting, we're talking about how to plant seeds, how to go deeper, how to root deeper. And I just feel like the embodiment of that person-to-person work, selflessness shown in that way, you know, more so than actively thinking, oh my gosh, this is how we're going to get members. I just feel like that's how you win. You know, we talk about winning people. That's how you win, when you're serving beyond your own selfishness. You're serving them for the benefit of them. And it's when we talked about prosperity preaching, we were talking about where some of the locations of these churches were and how the communities around them did not reflect, you know, what we thought was the hoarded wealth of these buildings and of these congregations. This is yet another way to depart from those examples of capitalist Christianity or corporate Christianity that don't really serve the true needs of the community and kind of turn it on its head. You know, what happens when we serve the community as they need to be served, as opposed to maybe how we want to be pedestalized for serving them?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up such a huge point with, you mentioned earlier, inflation. Like, that creates such an obvious vector to address the needs of the community. I mean, people literally can't afford groceries right now. So what mm-hmm. can the church do to help with that? People are choosing between food and gas to get to and from work. And, you know, the church may be able to do something there. I mean, maybe give out gas cards. You know what? When I grew up, one of the churches that I was a member of, they had, you know, those vans that would come and scoop up all the members and bring them to church mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, imagine how many people actually need that in this moment, where they just, you know, gas is just too much to be riding yeah. just to church that I could attend virtually. But you want people in the building, go scoop them up.
Yep. Yep. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure right now. But that pressure is going to give way to a new forefront. It's going to be a new way of people interacting. It's going to be a new way of people behaving. When we talk about those vans and the service that they provided, the next step, you know, and the conversation for some people might be about that carpooling. The, you know that your neighbor is a member. Why are two cars going? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, yeah. this might spur other conversations that begin to make sense, that kind of link all of this together, that we're not so much talking about what it used to be. We're talking about what it needs to be and what it has the potential to be so that we can go forward, you know, and just kind of strip away some of these ideas and some of these practices and some of these bad behaviors that might have taken root that really did not serve us. A pandemic came, we realized how much of that mess did not serve us. You know, there's something stopped the clock, and we realized, you know, pontificating for Sundays and making sure we were the best dressed. Nobody cared because you was in your house. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In your pajamas. Nobody saw your Gucci belt. Nobody saw, you know, and don't front. Some of y'all was showing up to show it off.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it's okay. But you know, when you turn from that, when you understand that that was not a service, that was not something that pushed us forward, that pushed the body forward, that pushed your faith forward, right? Mm-hmm. Wherever you were challenged in your faith, there's probably two ideas. Here's what I learned that I need to let go of, and here's what I learned that I need to embrace.
The last thing, and this is a big deal for me, churches need to recognize that a lot of these people just are not coming back. Like, it's too convenient to not be there. And mm-hmm. they prefer to do what they've been doing, what they've been forced to do for the past, you know, 20 months. That's okay. But what does that look like once you accept that reality? Here's one mm-hmm. of the things that I've been thinking about a lot during this pandemic. With so many churches transitioning to online worship, one of the things that church leaders are going to have to accept is the ugly reality that their ministry is just not all about God. It's not all about people's faith thing. Here's the truth. Once things went online, you've introduced an element of competition, because now I can go to the church down the street and the church in Canada and the church in LA. And if your stuff ain't right, then I'm going to click a button over here and I'm going to be down in ATL. You know, it's so if you fail to see that a part of the what you're doing has a presentation or production element to it, you're going to look at your numbers and you'll be like, oh, we did all this work and there's only 6 people watching this. And you wonder why.
Right.
Even if that's the number, what type of decisions do you make based on that? So in addition to being about God, in addition to having some production value, your singers, now you got to face the fact that, hey, they not the best. And if this is the first thing that people are seeing, then maybe you want to make a different decision. So yes, God, you got your production value. You got this unpalatable competition element. You also have data analytics. What do you do with the information that you now have, that we had a Christmas play that we put on and it was 40 people in the play to make this happen, and we had 12 people on the stream? Is that a good use of our time and energy? Is that how we... So these things are all part of ministry now, and the churches that recognize that this is different now, those are the churches that are going to succeed. You can't keep doing what you were doing now that it's been exposed to the world. Like, your pastor can't preach. I'm sorry. People not tuning in because that's the reason.
I'm not laughing.
And they can go anywhere. But that's just what it is. You know, that deacon that you got singing up there, sit him down. He's not the guy.
There's going to be an opportunity, much like you. So we're talking about, you know, church as institution, but church as organization, church as business organization, the opportunities are going to emerge much like they do in other industries for collaboration, mergers, and acquisition. So there will be opportunities to collaborate where, and I think, you know, as a Gen Xer who saw what some of my elders who were baby boomer or before, how they collaborated with other churches, you know, used to look like, we're going to go visit your church for afternoon service. We're going to come listen to your pastor for a big special event. We're going to combine the choir. You know, what is the combined choir except for we've decided that we don't need the men's choir, the children's choir, the senior women's choir, and then the young adult choir. But when we do the combined choir, we get more bang for our buck because we got this special choir director or this special set of musicians for this special event. And the only way to make it really worth our investment is to collaborate, is condense and pack down and serve it up all at one time. So I've seen that before where we combined resources or we combined our assets and we were able to serve more people or give more performances or offer more classes because we collaborated. Likewise, some people are getting ready to face, like we said, it's an ugly truth, honestly, because like anything, you know, pastor as leader, pastor as CEO, there is a human element that comes with that, where leaders get used to leading and they don't quite know, or maybe they've outgrown some of their covering. They haven't confronted that yet. They might need to do something else. So things are going to change on the landscape, and they're going to change on the physical landscape too. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is every building will not survive.
Right.
Things will be sold. Things will be liquidated. You know, physical addresses will move. The idea is to be out ahead in anticipating those types of changes so that you can, one, navigate that whole process, right? Managing your own personal emotions and managing the emotions and expectations of your congregate body, your stakeholders, right? But then once you do that, what are the opportunities that emerge? Can you collaborate? Can you condense? Can you combine with, you know, another ministry and get more for what you have? Mm. You have to get out ahead of thinking about this. And these don't need to be reactionary thoughts. They don't need to be coming from a place of fear. They need to be coming from a place of planning. Something that we've discussed across many different topics is how when you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. Mm-hmm. This is no different. So we recognize that if I was saying in my city, there were 2000 churches in 2019, what I'm saying is when we dwindle down to 1700, it doesn't have to mean that we lost 300 different individual churches worth of congregations, ministries, classes, buildings, or anything like that. It should mean that we have 1700 stronger, more well-resourced, better led, more well-informed, and better connected ministry serving the same community. Hopefully that's what it means.
Yeah, we have to be able to make those type of strategic decisions. And yes. And even as I raised the point that there is a production element to it, we understand that that's not just the only thing. Yes, it's also mm-hmm. about God and all these other things, but it's now also a part of it. And so, you know, maybe I don't have to have the musical staff to execute this. So maybe I don't have to have that because there are other churches who do that better. There are other ways that we can connect with other people and leverage what they do with what we do. And mm-hmm. the thing is, it's changing. It has changed. So churches now have to think about the fact that you at least now have two campuses. You have whatever your physical space was and those people. And then you also have at least an internet campus, meaning mm-hmm. you have people logging in every week and they're not going to stop. They're going to be there and you have to dedicate resources to that. You can't just set up the stream and have them watching and no interaction with them. Enlist those young people that you still have in your body and say, how can we help engage with these people? I don't get this. I'm a little too old. What's the best mode of engagement for people who are experiencing this virtually? And so now you've created opportunities where I may have grown up in the church as a musician. Now someone may grow up in the church as a production or producer or marketing director. Mm-hmm. So the church is now able to create new positions and new training for people based on the current conditions. So this is the thing that's happening. There's no way to get around this. The churches that accept this invitation to dream and innovate are the churches that will survive. And like you said, not everything's going to survive. Not every tradition, not every church. Some of this stuff just don't fit virtually.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate in some cases. And in some cases, cool.
I mean, the honest to God truth, but I think, you know, we can't get it all in here, but I think we need to have a specific conversation about our culture and what we promote going forward and what we can see is going to, you know, possibly pass away. And it doesn't have to be that it passed away because it was so bad. Sometimes we have to archive things. I mean, think about how you store data on your computer or your phone. You archive certain things so that they're not, you know, taking up space, even on your screen. You put them in a space to keep them safe. You know, to so that they're not bothered, so that they don't accidentally rather get deleted or overlooked. You know that you put them somewhere for safekeeping, and there's space for a conversation about just recognizing that what the boomers might have shown Gen X has not been showcased or introduced to our younger people, the millennials and going younger. And what do we do with those things that we intend for them to know about, but maybe that are no longer in active use?
As much as we want it, normally ain't coming back. So what does this look like going forward? How can our churches best meet this moment where it's very clear that people need a lot of help? And so if you're going to church, start that process of dreaming, envisioning, what can the church be? What should it be right now? And if you're not, you might want to log in to see what churches are doing, because you really do have a ton of options now. Everyone going virtual. So maybe you find something that actually does work for you. That's healing. That's doesn't require things of you that you may not have to give. And it's a different age, because the other thing that's not going away is church. Church is not going away. So people need that community. People need that space where they can work out spiritual ideas and have community with other people who share some of those ideas. And so this is definitely not a show where we're saying like church is over. It's not, but it's time for the church to adapt. So let's see what that looks like. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.